On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, and lo and behold, here it is, the end of the broadcast week. Almost the end of March. It is the 28th day of March 2014. This is Friday on the Front Porch. This is, in fact, The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you will find a selection of stories for your news stories for your consideration on any given day. It is also where you'll find the spiffy new media player, which works delightfully well. It's also where you'll find access to the chat room. And I certainly encourage you and welcome you, if you never have been, to give it a try. It's a delightful little community we have going on in there, and a lovely adjunct to any given evening's proceedings. You'll also find at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com the PayPal button and the mailing address, which is how we keep this whole thing going. We come into the program this evening with a fighting chance at actually getting a little bit ahead if we can raise the $150 that we need on any given evening. So use the PayPal button in any amount you deem okay for you. I mean, there are no subscription fees, nothing, you know, there are no set prices. We're not selling anything. This is not a business. But, yeah, PayPal button, or if you want to, if you want to use the traditional mailing method, just remember, checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable to The Horn, or Head On Communications. And, shoot me an email, I'll let Boss Man Wayne know to keep an eye out on the mailbox. It's that easy. And of course, a reminder: if you listen to the program on a mobile device or a smart something or another, we recommend the apps from both TuneIn Radio and Stitcher. Okay, so hopefully that covers those bases as we move into the bulk of the program. Oh wow! I just got a tweet right here at the beginning of the program from our buddy the Angry Indian. Holy! I haven't seen this story, and it's going to take a little reading to get to it, but it's from a website called End the NRA, which I agree with. Headline: Jealous man murdered sister to cover up incest. Wow. Yeah, how do you not? Ripped from the pages of today's headlines. Well, here's today's headline. But, of course, there's a lot of stuff out there. Last night I mentioned a little bit about the incredibly stupid stuff that I get by way of pitches from the right wing on any given day. Well, look, another one. The controversy, the faux trage that surrounds this new Russell Crowe movie. Wow. So today I get a pitch from the weirdos at, and I mean weirdos, faith-driven consumer. No oxymorons in that phrase, no. Faith-driven consumer. I wonder if we could ever get the faith-driven consumers to ask for somebody to, for mountaintop removal to be ended. Well, probably not. Faith-driven consumer, the group behind the recent IStandWithPhil.com movement. Oh, my God, it's them. The duck doofus bunch. The people who supported the guy who made a fortune making duck calls to make other ducks think that he wanted to have sex with them. Yeah, that movement, which played a leading role in Phil Robertson's return to Duck Dynasty in the 24th and a half century. I climbed the swamp for Mars, is tracking the commercial viability of major Hollywood films. Chris Stone, a certified brand strategist, and certified brand strategist is in all capital letters, who knew, and founder of Faith-Driven Consumer, has issued the following statement. In the run-up to the release of Noah, we asked our Faith-Driven Consumer community whether or not they would be satisfied with a biblically-themed movie designed to appeal to them, which replaces the Bible's core message with one created by Hollywood, and 98% responded that they would not. Despite a flood, ha ha ha, they are clever, of media stories over many months indicating that the film replaces the biblical account with a modernistic revisionist narrative, we remained hopeful that ultimately the filmmakers would get it right and would be successful in reaching their target consumer audience. Having now seen Noah, we are disappointed to report that the film misses the boat. Oh, misses the boat. They are a witty bunch, the Fundies. Noah is a significant departure both from the biblical narrative and message, and faith-driven consumers are likely not going to spend their hard-earned dollars on an entertainment product that fails to resonate. Maybe they wanted the old Bill Cosby joke in there. Noah! Noah! Yes, Lord? How long can you tread water? Have these faith people, are they laboring under the misapprehension that all the hungry have been fed, all the naked have been clothed, all the homeless have been housed, so they can just sit around fulminating over the Noah myth? Well, of course, if you tell them it's a myth, they will scream, and well, they may even say that they want you to be, whipped. Yes, whipped. Because, of course, that's what the loving God would do. You know, the loving God would also flood the planet and kill every human being. So I give you... I give you Tristan Emmanuel, and America cannot be blamed for this one. He's a Canadian. Did you know that there is an anti-LGBT website out there called, and I kid you not, Barb Wire? You know, probably because they're funny. It's probably a little teasing smirk on the fact that Matthew Shepard was crucified on a barbed wire fence. I don't know that for a fact, just sort of makes sense. Tristan Emmanuel, anyway, this evangelical, he's all head up because he wants blasphemy laws to be put back on the books. Really? Blasphemy laws. Let's check it out. Why not?
I think it's time to bring back blasphemy laws. And here's why.
The thing that's really disturbing about Noah isn't the silly. It's that it's immoral. It's about a psychotic mass murderer who gets away with it, and his name is God. Genesis says God was so angry with himself for screwing up when he made mankind so flawed, that he sent the flood to kill everyone. Everyone. Men, women, children, babies. What kind of tyrant punishes everyone just to get back at the few he's mad at? I mean, besides...
And then he added this little ditty.
Hey, God, you know you're kind of a dick when you're in a movie with Russell Crowe and you're the one with anger issues.
Bill Maher is known for being an offensive, anti-Christian bigot. It's his trademark. But this time, he's...
Actually, if we're going to talk about bigots, it might be nice to point out that, no, that's not what he's known for. He's known for being a funny guy with pretty profoundly held opinions that he manages to deliver humorously, in the vein of a lot of other Americans. But never mind. This guy is a goober.
Gone too far. He may have protection under the First Amendment to say whatever slanderous thing comes out of that toilet bowl brain of his, but it doesn't mean Christians should turn the other cheek, which brings me to my point. There was a time when Christians actually believed in defending the honor of God, and they would have unanimously condemned Bill Maher. Back then, Maher would have faced stiff penalties for his slanderous crimes against God and country. And the reason?
Of course, there are those of us who hold to the position that you can't slander an imaginary creature. Or then there's the position that, wait a minute, this is the almighty, all-powerful creator of the universe, and he's not powerful, but he's not powerful enough in his own right to defend his own honor? I mean, look, lightning bolt, do it! You're God! I don't think Bill Maher's out there running around with a protective aura of lightning bolts around him. You know why God gets such a bad reputation? Because of assholes like Tristan Emanuel. That's why.
Slander the almighty authority of America, God? And you've ridiculed the very foundation of its laws, values, institutions, and authority, and leadership. You see, you slander one, you slander all.
Huh?
This is the reason why it's unacceptable, for example, to threaten the life of the President of the United States, even to slander the President. But if Maher can get away with it, if it's acceptable to slander and profane the name of God, then well, why not vilify and slander President Barack Obama? If all that is...
Really?
...needed is unbelief. I mean, why, I, for one, don't believe in Obama, just like Maher doesn't believe in God, and...
No, not just like that, you dipshit. Barack Obama is a real human being. God is that weird part of your lizard brain that hates all the same things you do. There is a difference.
I also think that Obama is immoral, perhaps even a lunatic. But back when America took the honor of God seriously, this is how they would have dealt with the likes of Bill Maher. Quote, be declared and enacted by the Lieutenant Governor, Counselor and Representatives convened in General Assembly, that if any person shall presume willfully to blaspheme the holy name of God, Father, Son, or Holy Ghost, either by denying or cursing or reproaching the true God, his creation or government of the world, or by denying, cursing, or reproaching the holy word of God, everyone so offending shall be punished by imprisonment not exceeding 6 months until they find surety for good behaviors by sitting in pillory, by whipping, boring through the tongue with a red-hot iron, sitting upon the gallows with a rope about their neck at the discretion of the court. Laughing now, Bill Maher?
Yeah, Yeah, laughing. Because that is from a statute that was passed before the passage or the ratification or the drafting even of the Constitution of the United States. Yeah, laughing at you, dipshit.
Lamentably, in 1952, the U.S. Supreme Court decided, quote, "It's not the business of government in our nation to suppress real or imagined attacks upon a particular religious doctrine, whether they appear in publications, speeches, or in motion picture." And ever since then, atheists freely and very publicly ridicule God, challenge every public demonstration of Christian religion, belittle Christians, and attack every institution, like marriage, bequeath.
Oh, that's what this is about. Like marriage, granted, it's only taken him 4 minutes and 3 seconds, but he's pissed off because two guys are out there somewhere picking out a China pattern together. Tiny, tiny, little, itsy, bitsy, microscopic, can't see it without a scanning electron microscope brain this guy has. I've warned in the past, they're theocrats. This guy wants a person to be whipped, or perhaps even hanged. He seemed to like the idea of the noose and the gallows, or maybe to have a red hot wire driven through Bill Maher's tongue. This guy wants that to happen, you know, because he's a follower of the loving Christ. Who forgives? Hey, you're mad at Bill Maher. Forgive him. Sorry, but that's what your Jesus said to do, dumbass.
To us by our Christian forebears. But I gotta say, Maher's comments last week are the most shocking and heinous public utterances of blasphemy on U.S. airwaves yet, and it's shameful, utterly shameful that...
Oh, what a pity dumbass has never heard this program.
Christians, and especially Christian leaders, have said very little. America, you see, is hanging on by a thin thread of long-suffering divine justice.
I get nature abhors a vacuum. Fred Phelps is dead. Long live Fred Phelps in the form of this guy, Tristan Emanuel. If that really is his name, Colonel Bat Guano. A thin thread of divine justice that the gays are out there and the abortioners are out there hacking away at. Maybe God can send some more tornadoes to wipe out parts of the country that worship him more than the heathen parts do. Has one of these freaks blamed the landslide in Washington on gays or abortion or whatever yet? Oh, God. Probably the wrong word.
The pugnacious, degenerate Bill Maher, he may think blasphemy is a laughing matter. The nation of America may think it can hide behind the First Amendment and free speech.
Did you hear the scary air quotes? The First Amendment and free speech. Interestingly, this guy wants to use free speech to urge that physical violence be done to someone he doesn't know, has never met, and yet is somehow offended by, but he doesn't think the guy, the person he wants to have whipped or a red hot wire driven through his tongue, he doesn't think that same guy has the right to disagree with it. That's some First Amendment these little theocrats want, isn't it?
And Christians may falsely think they are demonstrating Christ-like love by remaining quiet in the face of profligate profanity. But a day,
or maybe they're just not assholes like you.
Day of reckoning is coming. God is very clear. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
Well, Bill Maher didn't do that. There was nothing vain about what he said. There was nothing. He was. I don't think he was playing. I don't think that Bill Maher goes home at night and says, "Well, I sure worked the hustle tonight. I got all them people thinking I'm a non-believer. Here, let me fall on my knees, whip myself with a piece of barbed wire, put on the hair shirt, and say the rosary 19 times, and 47 paternosters before bed." Nope, it was not in vain. So he didn't violate the commandment, dipshit.
For the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain.
So why not let the Lord take care of the Lord's business? By the way, this guy also hates Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins. I love this part. I don't know Maher, and I have no reason to hate him, except there you go, hating. But I do know God. Really? You do? Does he talk to you? Do you hear the voices? He walks with me and he talks with me. Great big butterfly net. One of those fancy canvas jackets with the sleeves that tie in the back, a purple crayon for between his toes, and a little Thorazine dart in the neck every once in a while. And I think Mr. Brother Pastor Preacher Reverend Father Emmanuel's problems will diminish significantly. Note coming in from Steve. Two things. First, I'm pissed at you because you didn't warn me about a tennis ball and duct tape for this. Second, as a believer, I suspect that God is right now saying, why do people take my book so literally? I'm not sure I want to believe in me. Yeah, there was a little poem that we all had to learn in sixth grade, I think. I have to live with myself. It started, I have to live with myself, and so I want to be fit for myself to know. Maybe there's a reason God's all by himself. You know? Danny with a note. Go, Bob, go! And that is spelled, by the way, G-E-A-U-X. Danny is down in Louisiana, Stan. Go, Bob, go! Who is this dick? I can't see him as this is radio, but I bet he looks like a pig, John Hagee. No, no, this guy's considerably more butch, Danny. And he's youngish. And he's got you can look him up. What's his name? Tristan Emmanuel. Loser. If we are unwilling to hold blasphemers accountable, the Almighty Judge of the world will. Well, we'll deal with that when he does, okay? Why don't you just quit with the God flogging? Oh, my ache. Oh, Margaret. Yeah, we're going to have plenty good fun. We're going to have plenty good fun on this here Friday on the front porch. Here's a fun one. Edward Farrell is the vice mayor of Maricopa in Arizona. Yeah. He decided to post a little something-something on his Facebook page after the demise of Fred Phelps. This goob posts, "We need more Fred Phelps in this world. May you rest in peace, sir." And then when people said, "Wait a minute, you're a jerk." Oh, I didn't really know who Fred Phelps was. I thought he was just some preacher in Kansas. But here's the best part of it. The obituary that he posted. the obituary that he posted came from, drum roll please, because fundies are atne ute aitbre if you one what I inne, and because they are forever getting tripped up on stuff like this, the obituary that he posted was from The Onion. Fred Phelps Sr., the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church and the man who is widely credited with forever ending the gay rights movement in America, died today at age 84. According to biographers and historians, many of the facets of modern-day society that we now take for granted, such as the ban on gay marriage in all 50 states and the inability of homosexuals to serve in the military, can be traced back to Phelps's vocal public crusades against the unholy practice of homosexuality, which he began in 1991, and which quickly succeeded in bringing efforts to expand LGBT rights to a spectacular and abrupt halt. What Fred Phelps accomplished over the last 30 years, from a federal constitutional amendment limiting marriage to one man and one woman, to nationwide laws allowing businesses to turn away gay customers, makes him easily one of the most successful and monumental figures of the past century, said biographer Michael Ammons, noting that depictions of gays and lesbians began to disappear from popular culture and the media as soon as Fred Phelps began taking his powerful rallies against homosexuality from state to state. Fred Phelps devoted his life to one goal, and he triumphed. This was an incredibly influential man who deserved all the attention he received. Think of the legacy he leaves behind. In the past three decades, homosexuality has become practically non-existent in society. Yeah. He didn't know he was... He thought it was real. But before... Before everybody, and, you know, he's vice mayor, so one presumes that he therefore stands for election. Before he got called out on this, he said, I'm not kidding. This world needs to get back to the biblical standards that our God made for us. This guy was not afraid to preach it, and I respect that. He went on to say, I was just having a hard time with all of this gay and lesbian rights thing. It's never been an issue until these kind of people made it an issue. What in the heck makes these people think they're so entitled? Because he claimed that somebody in Washington, D.C. had taken a picture of him in a health club shower. Oh, really? Moran. Big ol' Moran. And, of course, the Morans ye have always with ye. I mean, on and on and on. Then there is, of course, Looney Louie Gohmert. Oh, for pity's sakes. About half of these things I often wish really were from The Onion. But they're not. No. No, they're not. You know, of course, that on Tuesday, arguments were had in the... Hobby Lobby case, which, as Dr. Bill brilliantly pointed out and will continue to work through come Monday, Hobby Lobby, the essence of the Hobby Lobby claims stem from the massive wrongness that is, in fact, the Citizens United decision. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, enter Louie Gohmert, who is able to explain why it is that Hobby Lobby should be able, as a corporation, to compel its employees to adopt that corporation's own religious dictates, like, you know, no, thou shalt not use contraception, or what they call it, what that idiot call it, abortion pills. Jesus. Never mind Enter Sandman. Enter Gohmert. In a minute, as soon as we're done talking about dishwashers. Oh, well. No, he decided to sit down with Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins, of the Family Research Council. Yeah. In order to explain to Tony why it is that baby Jesus wants corporations to be able to, yeah. So, stand by. Here we go.
Listening to Washington Watch, as I mentioned earlier, we're broadcasting live from the studios of KORU on the campus of Oral Roberts University here for Religious Liberty Week. I'll be speaking on campus here tonight. Congressman Gohmert, you, as you mentioned earlier, you were in the overflow yesterday for the oral arguments for Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Woods specialties. You've also made statements about this repeatedly. What's your take on the court's line of questioning yesterday? Any sense of where they may be going?
Well, I mean, it started off pretty strongly against the Hobby Lobby position you had the Solicitor General under the Obama administration still doing the work for her boss when she was Solicitor General, and it's one of the things that shouldn't be any news. I talked about it back when she was nominated. For goodness sake, she was Solicitor General.
Goodness.
So either she gave the administration advice on the most important piece of legislation they were taking up or would ever take up from their standpoint, or she wasn't doing her job. She said she never talked about it with anybody, so either she was incompetent as Solicitor General or she didn't tell the truth before the Senate, which would mean she wasn't appropriate to be on the Supreme Court. But even if she were on the Supreme Court, if she ever talked to anyone, I just don't see how she wouldn't have done that on the most important piece of legislation they had. How she would, she'd have to be recused and not participate in that opinion. But there she was, picking up as Solicitor General, immediately going on the attack for the Hobby Lobby attorney, and she's the one that basically, or just, you know, pay the religion tax, and then you can have your religious beliefs. But even Justice Kennedy.
What? Really? Really? Sonia Sotomayor said pay a religion tax and then you can have your religion? That's pretty stirring. I mean, I would have thought that would have made like maybe the front page above the fold of maybe the Washington Post or the New York Times. Supreme Court justice calls for religion tax. It wasn't there? It didn't happen? You mean Louis Gohmert is just lying to people because he's a liar? Yeah, that's precisely what he's doing. He's lying to people because he's a liar. Why is he a liar? Do we really have to follow this? Do we really have to unravel this skein to its logical conclusion? Louis. So, by the way, now we understand why progressives and liberals need things like internet radio, or, well, radio in general would be nice, too. But why does God need a radio station? Can we ask that? Shouldn't people just be able to pray and then the answer comes and or maybe your minister tells you from the pulpit or something? Why does God need a radio station? Oh, wait, because money. Right?
You know, seemed to take a bit of a zinger at the Hobby Lobby attorney, Paul Clement. And but then at the end of argument, he seemed he didn't. He made a great point that, look, if they ruled with the government in this case, then there would be nothing. The Supreme Court would be saying, in essence, there would be nothing wrong with flatly telling anybody in America, you have to pay for other people's abortion, period. And then it was interesting to hear the Solicitor General, current Solicitor General, telling the court that basically if you're a for-profit corporation, you cannot form religious beliefs. When I was shocked.
How can a corporation form any beliefs? It is, oh, but it is a person. Oh. Okay. Oh, and thank you, Irish Dave. Irish Dave has the answer to my question. What does God? Why does God need a radio station? God needs a radio so the women's can listen in silence since it's learning time. Precisely. Mm-hmm. By the way, I guess Steve went out and had a quick look at Pastor, Brother, Minister, Reverend, Father, Tristan Emanuel, because Steve writes and says, one word, closet. Probably. Okay, okay, Louie, because we're getting to the fun part now.
Octane, I mentioned this to Paul Clement after arguments, but this is a Justice Department that has indicted corporations for forming intent to commit a crime. Well, Tony, if you can, as a
or not indicted them. See Chiquita Banana, in which the direct board of directors all knew that Chiquita Banana was hiring hitmen to go and murder its workers in Colombia because they were doing bad, ungodly things like wanting a living wage or trying to form a union. And so they just send the board of directors knew that the guys were just going out in the dark and the still of the night, 4 o'clock in the morning, call the guy out, bang, one right behind the ear, no problem. They knew that. They formed an intent. The directors did. Not the corporation, because the corporation only acts through its, through the, and so, a Bush administration attorney general or Justice Department lawyer negotiated with, at that time, soon to be or would eventually be Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, who was representing Chiquita Banana, and they decided it would just be a bad idea to indict a bunch of people who are corporate directors of the board for putting together a murder-for-hire scheme. That just, that, well, it wouldn't be cricket now, would it? I mean, it's just not done. Because, I mean we wouldn't want to embarrass Chiquita Banana now, would we? Anyway, yeah, because Louis Gohmert lies.
Corporation, through your directors and officers, form the intent to commit a crime, then you can certainly, through your officers and directors, form an intent to have religious beliefs. And if everyone...
Is he equating crime with religious beliefs? Because I think he is. In which case, it may be the first time ever in my life that I've agreed with Louis Gohmert.
If your directors and officers has the same exact religious beliefs, whether you're Amish and have formed a corporation or any other religious group, Quakers or whatever the group is...
Yeah, they formed a corporation and sold oats.
Certainly a corporation can, if they can have intent, as the Justice Department repeatedly proves in court, then they can certainly have religious beliefs.
Hmm. Yeah, you can hear Tony. Norman? Yes, Mother Bates? Perkins? Hmm. Louis, I don't think we necessarily wanted to compare religion with a criminal conspiracy, but, well, there you have it, and there it is.
Well, Congressman, We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. We're up against the break. As always, it's great.
Wait, why does God, who needs a radio station, need a commercial break? Oh, so many questions and so damn few answers. And it's kind of frustrating that way. And this. Sometimes the headline enough is enough to do your head in. This, of course, comes from. Oh wait, hey, maybe there is an upside. Irish Dave pointing out, you know, we could, this way we could run a hot wara through the corporation's tongue when they like, you know, blaspheme and stuff. Not the good religious beliefs, though. Yeah, just when they blaspheme. Kevin with a note. Answer to the God question. If the answer to that question of why does God need a radio station is that God has decided to let us work out things for ourselves, then we humans are doing a piss-poor job of it, aren't we? If the answer is that God needs our help to do these things, then he's not the omni-everything these fundies call him. Maybe a third answer? Yes, Kevin, because money. Bingo. Strange place Florida is. No, really. The St. Augustine Record has the account of a police officer for Bunnell or Bunnell, B-U-N-N-E-L-L, Florida, who was also once a Duval County school patrol cop. No, really. Has been charged. Oh, dear. Has been charged with soliciting teenage boys for sex online. Mm-hmm. He was posing online, obviously without video, as the matter turns out, as a 16-year-old girl. I say he was doing this without video because it turns out that Michael Gerard Stavris II is 6'3" tall and 400 pounds. He stole a 16-year-old girl's identity, allegedly, and then used it to create a Facebook profile. And then went around friending up teenage boys to get them into sexy time talk. And he swapped nude pictures with them. He would send them pictures of female breastises in exchange for them sending pictures of their penises. In exchange, he also promised to perform oral sex upon them behind their schools. He was particularly cruising his own high school alma mater of 12 years previous, Flagler Palm Hot Coast High School. Yeah. Oh, dear me. Dear me. But there's more. I mean, there's always more. There's ever so much more. Consider for a moment. This is going to have a little bit of follow up to it. I've been meaning to get to this story for a couple of days now. because it goes back to March the 25th. It is another article by the tremendously talented Ken Ward Jr. over at WVGazette.com. He's a reporter. What we have to do to get this guy a Pulitzer, I have no idea, but it should happen. Headline, March 25th, trace amounts of MCHM, methylchlorohexane methanol, found in elk plant water. Water being distributed from West Virginia American Water's Elk River treatment plant contains what the company called trace amounts of the chemical MCHM, according to new test results made public Tuesday following questions raised by the independent scientific team investigating the impact of the January 9th leak at Freedom Industries. And April 9th is not that far away, so that'll be 3 months. And the stuff is still in the system. Guess what? The stuff's going to remain in the system. It's never going to not be in the system. The testing of samples taken Friday and Saturday showed levels of the chemical between 0.42 parts per billion and 0.60 parts per billion in water that had completed various stages of filtering and treatment. Those levels are far below the 1 part per million health screening level devised by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and based on really, really dodgy reasoning in the first place. But Ken didn't write that. I said that. West Virginia American Water sent out a press release because, well, remember, their first task is to generate profit for their shareholders. And the press release said that the MCHM levels are so low that they are considered estimates by the laboratory because they are too low to be quantified. 0.42 parts per billion, 0.60 parts per billion, but they're too low to be quantified. On the other hand, even though West Virginia American Water Company was doing its best to spin away from this, Andrew Welton, who is leading the WVTAP effort, which is trying to test some of the water, you know, long after the initial disaster, said, "I don't know that it's as critical that we can't nail down the exact concentration as it is to know that the chemical is present." And then this. When you're trying to decontaminate a water system, you want to remove all of the contaminated water. Obvious, one might think. But it's not so obvious if your only goal is generating a profit for your shareholders. And, you know, West Virginia American Water is, well, hell, they even gouged their customers for flushing, for trying to flush their systems. Good God. And the story simply will not go away. Well, there's more to be told here. More indeed. Because guess what? The WVTAP program being led by Andrew Welton, and they got some of their water sampling back. They tested in 10 homes, just 10, in different parts of the affected area of the poisoning disaster. Remember, when a chemical that is used in prepping coal to be burned in coal-fired power plants and whatnot, a few thousand gallons were released into the Elk River and thereby transmitted to about 300,000 human beings. Well, WVTAP has gotten its first water sampling results back. They sampled in 10 homes, like I said. All 10 homes showed the presence of MCHM, all 10. Guess what? If you sampled 1,000 homes, probably all 1,000 would show the presence of MCHM. Why is that? It's because the water system was not shut down after they found out the water was poisoned. It's because West Virginia American Water needed the water to keep flowing, and the governor of the state of West Virginia, who had the emergency powers to do so, did not stop the poison from flowing into homes and hospitals and schools and restaurants and bars and businesses and churches and nursing homes. Didn't stop it. Yeah. All 10 homes. Most of the samples were below 2.2 parts per billion. Andrew Welton, who also said, you know, you really want to get all the bad water out, said the problem remains. More work is needed to understand the system. Agreed. But if it's in the water system at the treatment plant, how is it ever not going to be in the water systems of the individual homes? Yeah. By the way, in the midst of all of this, there's still a bankruptcy going on. Gary Southern, the man who mocked 300,000 poisoned people by standing in front of a camera while talking about what a bad day he'd had while slurping on a bottle of Aquafina. Well, he's complaining to the court that, by God, he wants paid. Been working hard here. Need to be paid. And I want my legal fees paid. Maybe, just maybe, it's not quite working out for him. Gary Southern wanted his legal fees treated as an administrative expense so that he could get in front of the line to get money before there's no money to get. You know, get in line in front of the poisoned people. Get in line in front of the poisoned businesses. Get in line in front of everybody. Give me my money. I like money. Yeah. He asked for Freedom's insurance coverage to pay for his legal fees. The federal trustee, however, is Judy Robbins, and she said that she doesn't object to Southern being paid for his work up until the moment of the turnaround officer was hired in order to wind things up. But she did say that she objects to treating a $48,909 legal bill from Kay Casto and Cheney Law Firm. She objects to that being considered an administrative expense. What she said was, while this may result in some hardship to the present officers or directors in the event they must fund their own defense, their plight is neither better nor worse than general creditors who rendered services or supplied goods in reliance upon the expectation of payment. Yeah, even those people are further up in the line than the people who actually got poisoned by Freedom Industries. Mm-hmm. Yep. Meanwhile, people began noticing on the Elk River some strange white foam. And the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection yesterday spent the day trying to figure out what it was, but being as how the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection is the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection and is a wholly owned subsidiary of the polluting industries like coal and oil and gas and chemicals and what have you. They look at the foam and say, well, dang, we ain't got no idea what that is. What the hell is that white foam on the Elk River? This time through, West Virginia American Water did shut down its intake pumps. They can be taught. But now they say that a second set of samples of the white foam has tested negative, quote, for any harmful materials. And they say that that lends credence to their theory.
It's just a theory.
That the white foam is a natural occurrence related to the decay of plant materials. Okay. Sure. Happens all the time. I mean, I presume plants decay in places besides West Virginia. Do y'all who live near rivers ever see great big gobs of white foam just moseying down your river? I'm open to a little education on this. So, just to recap, a corporation, don't you love the concept of giving religious rights to freedom industry? Because it's not just about Hobby Lobby, it's about everybody. Can you, what do you reckon the religious policy of Alpha Natural Resources would be? What do you think the religious doctrine of ExxonMobil will be? Yeah. Or maybe BP. It was BP that dumped a whole bunch of tar sands crude in Lake Michigan. What, that wasn't that? Yes. Yeah, sometimes white foam, Jay Cruzen says. Lots and lots and lots of it? I mean, sure. But usually there's a cause. So remember, even though the WVTAP program is finding MCHM still in people's water systems in their homes, just remember, we still have no idea how much of it individuals consumed because it hasn't been tested for. And because we don't necessarily know what it does to the human body. And they're not going to test for it. And the people who consumed it just get to live in fear for the rest of their days of that moment when the doctor looks at them and says, cancer. Or says, you might want to start getting your things in order. Thanks, Gert. Thanks. But I bring on all of this this update for a reason. The story comes out of Italy. About 700,000 Italians have had their water poisoned. Toxic waste was allowed to go into the water supply of 700,000 people in the Abruzzo region. That's about half of the area's population. It happened between 2004 and 2007 continuously because Mont Edison, which is now known simply as Edison, buried 250,000 tons of toxic and industrial waste at a facility there in Abruzzo, and they've been doing it since the 1960s. Therefore, an Italian government official today tried to reassure the residents of the region that the water's safe to drink. According to Agence France-Presse, following a series of alarming reports, regional governor Gianni Chiodi said that water was, quote, no longer poisoned and was of, quote, excellent quality. Sure it is. this past Wednesday is when people were actually told the water was poisoned. According to the newspaper, the Corriere della Sera, the chemicals found in the water supply could affect the nervous system, the liver, the kidneys. They are suspected of being carcinogenic. The Minister of Environment, Gianluca Galletti, said knowing 700,000 people might have drunk polluted water for years is terrifying. I appreciate Environment Minister Gianluca Galletti for just saying that. Because we can't even get that much out of Gert over here. It is terrifying. Everyone. Well, okay, I'm not gonna get all Jennifer Stefano and presume to speak for everybody in the affected area. But I do know for a fact that people who were subjected to the Freedom Industries disaster, I do know people who are terrified. Who do not now know what the future is or might be. None of us knows the future, but we can take a guess at it. We can try to plan for it. But no. Not if you're a West Virginia American Water Company in the 9-county area of the Freedom Industries disaster. And 700,000 people in Italy are apparently equally disturbed with good damn reason. Here is the difference, however, between Abruzzo and the Kanawha Valley. This sentence. Some 19 Mont Edison executives are currently on trial as a result of the investigation into the toxic waste leaks. They're on trial. They might go to jail. They might go to prison. They might be subjected to hefty fines. Over here? Not so much. Not a single, not even so much as a stream littering charge has been levied at Gary Southern or Denny Farrell or J. Clifford Forrest or any of the other toxic hacks who allowed this to happen. It's the greatest country in the world. Damn skippy. Jim pointing out plant materials, going back to the elk foam story. Since when do plants have smokestacks? What a devil with language they are. They are indeed, Jim. They are indeed. So, we've got some stuff here worth working with, don't you? Don't you agree? And thus it is that, lo and behold, Friday on the Front Porch is here. And I encourage you to join in the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. So there are four telephone lines you can use. You reach any or all of them by dialing 304-658-3333, although there's no dialing anymore. What is the, what's the right word for that? Inputting? Oh, by the way, this from Asa. Bob, the white foam in the Elk River might be on accounts it has demons in it. Have you guys tried exercising the river? Oh, we'll probably get around to that sooner or later. Sooner or later, Asa. Anyway, yes, Friday on the Front Porch, the conversation roundtable part of it is about to begin. Light up the phone lines. There are four of them for your enjoyment. 304-658-3333 is the number. And, of course, long-time veteran Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky will be putting up the bat signal and calling together the conversation panel for the Skype side of the conversation. If you have never participated in Friday on the Front Porch and would like to, just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk on Skype, and you'll friend up, and lo and behold, you'll be in the conversation before you even know what happened. Isn't that nice? So jump right in. Multiple means of participation, and it is always a lively discussion, especially if you've got stories that or news or whatever that you want to bring to the table and let the community consider. It really does. It makes it a lot of fun. So we will take a break and come on up on the front porch and get yourself a swig out of that crockery jug with the corn cob stopper or a glass of sweet tea. The weather's been lovely and wonderful. Well, it presaged some storms. I mean, the sky looks like a bruise right now, but it was downright toasty out there today. Managed to go outside without so much as a coat. Yep. All right, then. Break time. This is Conversation Radio. We are trying to raise $150 this evening. Sure would be nice. Thus far, not so much. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mailing address. This is Conversation Radio, and I am Bob Kincaid. For those of you who saw my Facebook post from last night, you probably know why I played that song. Christopher Cross, Ride Like the Wind. You know, it just reminds me. We've got such a long way to go. Such a long way to go. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you very much to Sal for getting us started on tonight's fundraising. And hopefully Sal will have some friends who will push things along. I want to make sure and I said we could, if we got to tonight's goal, we could get a little bit ahead, which would be nice. I say that because we finished last night about $30 back, and lo and behold, earlier today, Nelson, thank you, Nelson, took us from being $30 back to being $20 ahead. So now we are only $125 away from meeting the fundraising goal for this evening. So thank you very much, Nelson. Thank you indeed. And thank you, Sal. So, yeah, here we are, Friday on the Front Porch. Hail, hail, the gang's all... Well, the gang is not quite all here. Of course, there's always plenty of room in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, but there is one line remaining open on the traditional phone lines. We have, of course, four lines that can get on at one time, and we've got one line remaining if anybody wants it. So let's do the check-in. Wait a minute, let me kill the music. There we go. Sorry, Skype group. Y'all were getting... Anyway, so the music is gone. All right. Who's on line one? Hey, welcome to the program.
Carmen Miranda.
Okay, Ms. Miranda, thank you very kindly.
My Tutti Frutti hat, the gang's all here.
Yes, indeedy. Bananas and mango. What did Jimmy Buffett say? With bananas and mangoes all piled to the sky.
You got it. If you'll excuse me for a second, I need to see Mrs. Miniver.
I understand. Okay, so we've got Jim, a.k.a. Carmen Miranda. Hey, welcome to Friday on the Front Porch. Just a minute. Hey, there you are.
Yeah, how you doing, bud?
Hey, it's Bill. Okay.
Doing himself, you know?
Absolutely. Doing right, smart, good. And so stand by. We'll bring on line three. Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hi there.
Hey, is that you, Kevin?
Yep, that's me.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So we have Jim, Bill, and Kevin on the traditional phone lines. One line remaining open if somebody wants to jump into that. And now let's check in with the roll call on the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Good evening. Good evening, Sparky. Anybody? Skype group?
Bueller.
Can you hear me?
Now I can, yes. Okay, so there's Sparky. We've got Joe. We've got we have Sergi. Waggy's with us. Jay Cruzen's with us. I think I just heard somebody vape. I say that because
must have been Jay Cruzen.
Yeah, I think so because I've become.
Have you heard that sound? Really?
Yes, I really did.
Through my mic.
Uh
huh. I guess I'm gonna have to keep it muted because you'll be hearing that a lot.
Well, I'm sitting here. I know that I've become quite conscious of that sound because I've been making it quite a bit myself.
How's that doing?
You know what? I like it. It was a little strange getting used to it at first, but I like it. And it cuts way back on the number of cigarettes that you smoke.
Yeah, I got to do that.
Well, it only took me 2 days, and the number of cigarettes I smoked was zero. And then I tried to smoke one, and it became disgusting to even try.
I'd like to get there. Thanks very much for the encouragement. Terrace is with us this evening.
Hello.
How do you do? And Horst is with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And Joe, did I call your name?
Kevin, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. By the way, I wanted to mention something. I promised our good friend Dr. Allen I would mention this tonight as well. Tomorrow is the Keystone XL pipeline protest in Waco that is being put together and conducted by Waco Friends of Peace, an excellent, excellent group of people with good, with great good spirit and good motivation and good intentions. They're going to be gathering near the Payway on the corner. Well, let me just look it up here again. I thought I had it by heart, but I don't.
There you are.
There we go. It is tomorrow from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the corner of Valley Mills Drive and Waco Drive. That's the corner near the Payway. That's P-E-I-W-E-I. And Dr. Allen points out, no issue of greater importance to progressives. The survival of mankind and our fellow plants and animals on this planet is at stake. Already climate change is responsible for 400,000 deaths annually, and we are in a mass extinction of other species. We demand that President Obama not approve the pipeline project, and our goal is to heighten awareness of the horrific dangers of this project among citizens in our community. Please join us in speaking out for life on Earth over the fossil fuel industry's endless gluttony for more profit. So again, 2 to 4 p.m. tomorrow in Waco, corner of Valley Mills Drive and Waco Drive. And if you got friends in Texas that are anywhere near Waco, drop them a note and tell them that you would very much like to see them there or meet them there, even if that's possible. So that's out there. And besides, the Waco Friends of Peace, like I said, are a magnificent group of people. When I saw Sergi, I thought, wait, I need to, because of Texas and the connection and everything, and that's when I remembered I needed to put that information back out there again. So, good evening, Front Porch Conversants. Anybody?
Somebody start.
Yeah, somebody start.
Good evening.
Well,
today
it's not raining in Northern California, but we're sure getting a blowjob.
Wind coming through, huh?
Yeah, the only other excitement I had today was a hawk killed a robin out in a redwood tree.
Oh.
Ugh.
But, well, that's kind of how nature works, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how nature works.
Well, we've been getting a blowjob in South Florida the past couple days, too.
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Discretion being the better part of valor.
We used to also add to that, Jim, we'd say a 10-foot Hungarian either.
Ba-dum-bum. You'll be here all night.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, yes. Tell you.
Yeah. Here in Texas, I've never seen some pretty much officially hit off the day. Our first severe thunderstorm watch of the season. We had several warnings, including Dallas.
Okay. Hey, Sergi, you're really bad tonight.
Yeah, you're breaking up bad. Yep.
Bad how?
Microphone. When
it
you talk.
Sounds like from Doctor Who.
I think
it's significantly distorted.
It's way too high on volume. So high that it's cracking.
What about now?
It just went way, way down.
Come up just a little bit.
Oh, by the way, a little bit of good news out of West Virginia in Gert's office. I'm surprised. Gert did something right. He actually vetoed today the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, HB 4588. Colocrats and Colicans both voted on this. And, the 20-week abortion ban, stuff like that, essentially trying to make the legislature wanted to take complete control of the lady parts. And oddly enough, Gert said no. I got to admit, I'm kind of surprised.
Did he give a statement?
No, I've got a press release from an organization called WV Free. So I don't know. I don't know if there was a statement.
Then we don't have to have you read it and do his voice again.
You mean Gert?
Yeah.
All right. No. Well, if anybody finds it, they can send it along. It was probably something along the lines of I checked in with the Friends of Coal, and they told me it was all right if the women folk went ahead managing their own insides, and the coal industry didn't think Obama was going to kill any jobs over it with his war on coal, so I decided to veto that there bill. That seemed just, is that pretty much par for the course, you think?
Yeah, that'll cover it.
Okay.
Good for Gert.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm proud of him. I know it's weird to say, but I am. If we could just get him to care about the rest of the people whose poisoning he supports, well, but, you know, Rome wasn't destroyed in a day, after all, was it?
Well, Bob, that guy brings up the old adage about a blind pig and an acorn, you know?
Yep,
I'm sure most of you guys have heard that one.
Yep, even a blind hog finds an acorn once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the Republicans made the mistake in the bill, Bob. If they'd have tied it to something that promoted coal, that bill would have passed. He wouldn't have vetoed it then.
Right. Protecting Unborn Coal Miners Pain Capable Act.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but let's be clear about something, Kevin. Both houses of the West Virginia legislature are majority Democrats.
Yep.
This bill was a democratically passed bill. And it passed by a huge majority. So now the question is it veto proof?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, it takes a while to show you where the truffles are, right?
Yeah. Oh God. And I tell you what, you live in this state, Jim. You know that we, when it comes to politicians, we've got swine down to a science.
Point. You're right.
Yeah. And of course, that immediately takes my mind back to Joni What's-Her-Name's Iowa Senate campaign ad from last night. I'm still not over that. Oh, my God. I grew up on a hog farm in Iowa castrating pigs. Send me to Washington.
I saw that on TV, actually, with the video, and it was just de-lovely. I mean, God, you talk about the lunatics running the asylum. That woman is just batshit crazy.
Can you imagine her replacing Tom Harkin? Because that's what she's running to do.
Bob, I cannot imagine that stupid woman replacing a toilet attendant.
Or a light bulb.
Did you happen to see the Stephen Colbert takedown of her on Crooks and Liars that I sent you?
Yeah, I did.
I just fell out of my chair laughing.
So much of what he does is brilliant. But you mentioned Stephen Colbert. Have you seen this, the outrage that he has generated?
Oh, yeah, about his... Wang Dong, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I saw the clip the other day before it was even tweeted or anything. I forget what the whole bit was about. I'm sure he was making fun of Republicans.
Well, no, he was making, what it was a bit where he was making sport of Dan Snyder because he won't change the racist nickname of the Washington Football Club.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You're going to love this. This just came in from Robert in Australia. Subject line says, forget Russian gas, just frack Europe, Obama.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he didn't. Please say he didn't. He did. Obama calls for combination of European fracking and U.S. exports to serve EU energy needs. Speaking after a meeting with European leaders at the EU-US summit in Brussels on Wednesday, President Obama suggested that the U.S. is open to exporting fracked shale gas, once promised as the source of American energy independence, to the EU and urged the EU to open up its own fracking reserves amid energy fears related to the crisis in Ukraine. Environmental groups have warned these policies will do nothing by way of energy security and everything for global environmental destruction and climate chaos, not to mention ruining all the water. Oh, God.
Who the hell is his press person?
Here's what he said, Jim.
My Lord.
I think it is useful for Europe to look at its own energy assets as well as how the United States can supply additional energy assets. Because the truth of the matter is that just as there's no easy, free, simple way to defend ourselves, there's no perfect, free, ideal, cheap energy sources. Every possible energy source has some inconveniences or downsides. And I think that Europe collectively is going to need to examine, in light of what's happened, their energy policies in to find are there additional ways that they can diversify and accelerate energy independence.
Bob, what can you tell me what the reaction was to that?
Have
there been any people who have commented on that statement, please?
I don't see here anything by way of European response, but the article does note that France and Bulgaria have an outright ban on fracking, whereas people have been protesting in the UK and in Poland against fracking operations.
I got to hand it to the Bulgarians. You wouldn't think of them as being on top of it like that. They sure are.
Well, yeah, exactly, Bill. And consider the tremendous success that Germany has had with wind and solar.
Yep.
And President Not Sure wants them to frack Germany?
I don't mind it.
He could have used another word that gives us F if he really was totally honest and realized what he was saying.
Yeah.
Well, is the irony lost on any of us that Germany's got all this massive solar investment going on right as this is taking place? I mean, if rather than fracking Europe for gas, why not just follow the example that's already being set there? I mean, that's a massive success, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is, although they have gutted the Energiewende, Psychoticus.
No, that's me. Horst.
Oh, Horst, I'm sorry. I'm sorry
if I stepped on Jim there. I didn't mean to do that.
No problem.
Sorry, Horst. I apologize. I wasn't actually looking. But the irony is not lost, but they have Germany abandoned its Energiewende, if I understand correctly. Even though, as Brother Albert pointed out to us a couple of weeks back, the coal-fired electrical utility posted a $7 billion loss in 1 year alone because solar is killing it.
I also heard that Germany plans on taking all their nuke plants offline within 10 years.
I think they've already started doing that.
Yeah, I mean, having them all offline within 10 years, though.
They actually decided that after Fukushima.
That was how I remembered it, too.
And by the way,
I saw a
Fukushima story, and I can't remember it now, but Japanese authorities have turned the running or administration of something over to Americans? Anybody see anything?
Is TEPCO American?
they kind of are, aren't they? Or at least they've got a significant American ownership interest in TEPCO.
That's always my first reaction to something like that. Is like, okay, who are we talking about? We're turning the control over to somebody else, but who's that agency?
If you think the nesting of one company owning another in America is bad, it has nothing on the Japanese situation. It's sometimes literally impossible for even the owners to figure out who owns what, since one group might buy another, which in turn buys another. And then after the daisy chain is gone, it buys the first group. So they've all bought each other, and they somehow exist in some sort of transitive state of constant passing of ownership. Because nobody's keeping track of this.
Oh, here it is. Well, this is reassuring. The U.S. and Japan said Monday that Japan would turn over hundreds of kilograms of nuclear material to U.S. custody, part of a nuclear security measure being announced at a summit in the Netherlands. The plutonium and highly enriched uranium are currently held by the Japan Atomic Energy Agency at a facility in Tokai, north of Tokyo. In a joint statement, the country said the material would be sent to a secure facility in the U.S. and converted into less sensitive forms.
Less sensitive?
Yes. Yeah, less sensitive.
Bob, I don't understand that. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to play dumb here, but...
Well, you know, you may be playing, but I'm not, because I don't understand it either. And I remember why the story stuck with me, Jim. How do they plan to get the plutonium from Tokai, Japan, to somewhere in the United States?
Well, that was my first question that I was going to ask. How are they going to transport this fissile material?
Swallows, of course.
African or European? Waggy, you can't just throw swallows out there and not get that comeback. I mean,
I know, but I don't recall the return comeback.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's just doctrinal. But it's a real question. And then, since it's going to go to a secure facility to be made into something less sensitive, isn't that what that thing that caught fire near Albuquerque is? It was a place to store and transmogrify nuclear waste into something less sensitive. Is that where the plutonium's going? Really?
Didn't they just have a cask that blew up there? One of their nice happy ones.
Yeah, there was a big dangerous underground fire at this experimental project plant in Albuquerque.
They've been loading high-grade plutonium fuel into these things, which they're not rated for. It's actually too hot. You have to keep it in storage for up to 20 years before it's cool enough that you can put it off to dry storage.
Yeah, like
they're making
water,
it too
don't
hot.
Don't you have to keep that thing in water or something like that, or some type of cooling agent?
Yeah, the old ones, they only had to keep them in cool for 5 to 10 years, depending on the size. But the new ones that they've been making for the modern reactors and with the deregulation on their sizes are too hot to handle for 20 or more years. They haven't built one that ever got cool enough to put into dry storage. And the dry storage they have won't fit it. And even when it gets cool enough, the actual energy dissipation requirements of it aren't enough to be put in dry storage. So the dry storage technology that they're proposing as a solution for this won't fit the nuclear fuel they're manufacturing now for the reactors. It'll fit the old stuff, but it won't fit the new stuff. So they literally have no solution for the new nuclear waste that they're going to generate.
Could you imagine working in a place like that?
Well, no. Because I have nightmare visions of Homer Simpson.
Doesn't Mark work in one of those places?
I think he works construction or something like around them, or it seems like maybe, yeah.
Nuke plants are always having retrofits every so many years.
Thing is, they should be having a lot more given the maintenance cycles on them.
I knew some guys that worked on Diablo Canyon.
Well, isn't the maximum efficient or safe longevity of a nuclear power plant is roughly 25 years?
But almost all of them are beyond that. You've got three types of hardening that happens. Everybody knows hardening from the British Comet disaster where their airliner came down due to work hardening in the pressure vessel of the jetliner? It just sort of exploded and disintegrated. And now they go through regularly in the airline industry to make sure there's no cracks forming anywhere. They have to replace whole sections. In a nuclear power plant, you've got 6 to 12 inches or more of steel that gets pressurized to stupid levels. It's just like a big thermos, right? They plug the top, and then they crank up the pressure and start generating power off of it. But the thing gets pressurized. Every time you fuel it and defuel it, and empty at the waist, you have to bring it up to stupid pressures and then back down again. And that cycle work hardens it in the way that we all understand. But in a nuclear reactor, you also have another type of, you have chemical hardening, where some of the materials the nuclear waste generates, just some of the random isotopes that it creates, are acidic, salt, saline. They chemically attack the lining of the vessel, so the inside gets chemically hardened. Now, it does get scrubbed out and filtered out in normal processing, but they never get all of it, they don't get it fast enough, things like that.
So one thing obtains there, Psychoticus, this stuff is going to be transported from Japan to the United States, and that means it's going to be transported one of two ways, all swallows and kidding aside. It's either going to go by ship or by air.
It'll go by ship. There is literally nowhere on Earth that they have a standard or a container or a thing that they can shove on in a plane that could transport nuclear fuel. It's never been done. They'd have to invent the technology. There's no standard.
Okay, so it's going
to
go.
It'd be way too heavy to. The shielding would be way too heavy to make it cost effective anyway. Yeah, it's going by boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of measures will that necessitate?
Usually, it's a dedicated ship. It's sort of a pariah ship. It does that one thing, and at the end of its life, it's sunk somewhere.
They've been doing that for years with all the. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, yeah. All the loose nukes and stuff, they've been transporting the nuclear waste back here.
Canada has had to mine nuclear fuel for quite a while. We've actually been selling our mined nuclear fuel because all of our nuclear fuel for our reactors has been coming from Russia in terms of, was it Swords to Plowshares programs?
Wow.
And a lot of their cleanup stuff is going through Canadian reactors because our reactors are really good.
I never even thought about the fact that nuclear fuel, plutonium, stuff like that was bobbing around out on the oceans. I mean, except for like nuclear aircraft carriers and whatnot. But
they try to keep it really hush hush.
That's kind of creepy. Hey, let's see. We've got another participant for the phone side of Friday on the Front Porch. Let's find out who we got. Hey, welcome to the Front Porch.
Hey, Bob and crew, it's Roger in Minneapolis.
Hey, Roger, what's happening?
Well, waiting for the rest of the snow to melt, and thought I'd tune in and chime in. One thing that moved me to call was your earlier addressing of the ongoing chemical crisis in the Elk River, I think it's pretty clear that what has happened is the chemical saturated an area of soil adjacent to the river and will continue to percolate through that soil and out of that soil and into the river for a long time.
Oh, I absolutely think that's true. But the other part of it is that, West Virginia American Water admits that it still hasn't changed its filters from its intakes.
Oh, is that right? I missed that part. I only heard part of it.
Right, but it's also a matter of this stuff is in the entire pipeline system. Remember when we were talking about this at great depth for weeks on end? One of the things that came to light was that I think out of last year, West Virginia American had a 30% water loss rate within its system. That meant that 30% of the water they put out of their plant never got anywhere.
Wow.
So similar numbers can be expected within the spectrum of this disaster. So that means 30% of the water that was poisoned is probably in the ground somewhere in that nine county area and has never been cleaned up and will never be cleaned up and will continue to leach into groundwater, leach into aquifers, leach. I mean, at one point in time, and this I'm glad you brought it up, Roger, at one point in time, a corporation called Waste Management. You've probably seen their trucks.
They sadly service our area.
Well, they wanted to take wastewater with MCHM in it, and they wanted to mix it with sawdust and then dump it in a landfill in a community in West Virginia called Hurricane.
Bob, who's going to write Tony Soprano?
It sounds more like the brain from Pinky and the Brain to me, Jim, but...
Well, you know, Tony was known for his clean practices on that particular show. I was just trying to...
Yeah, oh, no, I get it. The Waste Management applied to have its permit modified so it could dump 700 tons of this stuff, if that gives you any idea of the volume of this poison that's out there. 700 tons of this stuff they wanted to dump into the disposal services landfill in Putnam County.
Well, you know, when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor of California, they actually modified the regulation on landfills out there to accept so-called low-level nuclear waste. And they're doing that.
Well, why am I not surprised? And I'm not being snarky. Consider this. Now, this plan to dump the 700, what was it? 700 tons of this stuff, the plan to, that plan is dead. Okay.
That's good.
But before they even sought modification of their dumping permit, guess what they did? You know, what's that old saying? It's easier to ask forgiveness than permission.
They dumped it.
Well, that's the keeper.
Yeah. They dumped between 36 and 40,000 gallons of this stuff in that Hurricane West Virginia landfill.
Mm-hmm. And the response was, "What me worry?" from Mad Magazine.
Well, one time,
job creating, Jim.
Yeah.
Well, one time I'm driving behind a trash hauling truck. You know, it was a flatbed liquid, and the back gates kept flipping up, and stuff kept flying out. And when I hit that stuff, it was like driving on liquid banana peel, Bob. So I don't wonder what the hell they were carrying and why they were carrying it so carefully.
Think about
rackets are rackets. Trash hauling is one of the biggest rackets in the country.
Oh, without a doubt.
What were you going to say about Waste Management, Sergey?
The thing about Waste Management, and I hope for the love of Pete I sound okay now.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, the thing about Waste Management, they are Fort Worth contracts with them for garbage and recycling pickup here. And, yeah, there's something that I feel has always been off about that company, because I've seen the trucks up and down the city streets for years, and they here, I'm not sure anywhere else, but here all their trucks are painted green, and on sides they have all these environmental facts. You know, it's one of the purest greenwashing techniques I've ever seen. Like, one of them, and this is the one that really gets me: our landfills provide over 17,000 acres of wildlife habitat.
Mm.
It's like, a landfill? Really? How does that work?
Have any of you ever been to
the retired landfills? I've got two burning questions here.
Hey, hold up. Hold up. So Jay Cruzen, hold up just a second. What were you saying, Jim?
I just want to know how many people have ever really been to a landfill and have seen exactly what a mess those things are.
Oh, I have, yeah. They're nasty.
They're absolutely horrible. I mean, you know, it's just, my own experience was with a veterinarian, and I asked him what he did with the animals he had put down. He said, "Oh, we put them in landfill."
You can't do that shit out here in California.
Hey, look, we put radioactive fracking waste in our landfills in West Virginia.
Yeah, dead animals are all incinerated here.
Our landfills, when they build them, they line them, and then after they reach their capacity, they cover them, And then the one in Reading, they've got all these methane vents on the monitoring station.
Well, see, that's why right-wingers hate California so much, Sparky, because you're actually trying. You're making an effort. And they oppose the right-wing opposes even making an effort.
Well, hell, you people are civilized out there.
There you go, Jim. Go ahead, Jay Crater.
They do that in Florida, too. They actually generate electricity off of the methane that comes out of landfill. But the other thing I had was two burning questions from the topic so far, and one was about fracking. Has anybody heard anything else about Ohio and the moratorium they put on fracking because of earthquakes? And the second one was on the nuclear, the loose nukes thing that Rex was talking about. I wasn't aware that weapons-grade plutonium or whatever the nuclear material was able to be used in nuclear power plants.
Only can-do reactors in Canada.
It can also be de-enriched. You can mix it back with the regular U-238, bring the percentage down to reactor grade.
But a lot of countries are getting away from reprocessing fuel because it's a filthy process.
It's nasty.
Expensive. But Canada's reactors, they can just pop it in straight from carved up into powder, pound it back into the right shape, and shove it in a Canadian reactor, and we'll be happy as hell to get it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's cool. Does anybody know about the fracking in Ohio, I think it was? Because of the earthquakes?
Well, I know they screwed a friend of mine out of money. They paid her half the money that was supposed to and then backed out on the other half. That's the kind of people I am.
Just,
but I don't know who put a stop to it. Who was responsible for it in Ohio? I'd like to know.
I just put in a quick search, and I just searched Ohio fracking moratorium, and I found a story from January 16th of last year that says Ohio ends fracking moratorium with new regulations.
No, this was recent, and somebody's really loud on the phone line.
Well, it's Todd and Kathy. I mean, I thought they might have something to add since they're from Ohio.
Well, we've got an eye on the news, and haven't heard much thing, seen it come out in our face or anything, so I don't know what happened with it.
Because I thought most of the earthquakes in Ohio were caused by injection wells.
Just recently I heard that there was a moratorium put on fracking. I thought it was Ohio. I may be wrong.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen any come about that news thing, so no. And they've been talking about earthquakes around an area, fracking, but I don't know. We'd like to see something here, but I don't think that there has been anything so far.
What they've done, I'm looking at an Al Jazeera story right now. There are groups calling for a moratorium, and this story is from March 10th of this year, just a couple of weeks back. But what the Ohio DNR did is they went into one company with one well, Hillcorp Energy, and they shut them down to analyze data.
But wasn't there a problem in Texas with the earthquakes and fracking?
Oh, absolutely.
They said to what? Analyze data?
Yeah. Here's the state. Ohio's DNR said, out of an abundance of caution, we notified the only oil and gas operator in the area and ordered them to halt all operations until further assessment can take place.
Now, boy, that's a euphemism.
A little bit. But, yeah, there are horrible earthquake activity in both Oklahoma and Texas. But it hasn't stopped it.
Yeah, Oklahoma. Earthquakes are... Oh, sorry.
There's a suburb of Fort Worth called Azle that they have had something on the order of dozens of earthquakes, and we're only to the end of March this year they've had dozens of earthquakes, some that have actually been strong enough to cause damage. These are not just vibrators.
Well, Georgia had like a 5.0 earthquake about a month or so ago, and my wife actually felt it in North Carolina. And I just kind of wonder, you know, if that's the same damn thing. Because that's pretty rare.
Earthquake is an earthquake, like a rose is a rose is a rose, and they're not very, they can be very punishing.
And it also depends completely on your local geography. If you're over top of a rock, you may or may not feel it. If you're over top of sedimentary soils or something like that, you might get jiggled all over the place due to liquefaction.
And see,
we had a quake up here 3 months ago, and nobody here felt it, but it was really strong over in Tofino, the other side of the island, and people in Vancouver felt it. But we, in between those two, didn't feel a damn thing.
And see, here's a classic example of the great gigantic gulf that exists between the right and the left. Progressives, lefties, whatever we want to call ourselves, we see a whole bunch of earthquakes taking place in fracking areas, and we say, wonder if there's connection. The right wing, on the other hand, sees earthquakes in Oklahoma and Georgia and Texas and Ohio, and they say, the gays.
May I ask a question, Bob? Or just
jump right in, Jim.
Have anyone on the line been in a real earthquake?
No.
Yes.
I've been in lots.
I've been in several.
I was in two in San Francisco in 1989. The first one occurred in August, and I was staying in Oakland. And I was actually thrown out of bed.
That does happen.
And I called the concierge, and he said, what am I supposed to do? And he said, stand in the doorway. My reply to him was, I guess the only people who are going to survive these things are pimps and prostitutes, because they do that too.
I was
and
in the Dallas.
And the second one, I was going across the Golden Gate Bridge in October of 1989.
That's the one I was thinking of, the World Tribute episode.
You were there for Loma Prieta then.
Sir?
The name of the earthquake was Loma Prieta.
Well, whatever it was.
It originated down around Fort Ord. My stepson was at Fort Ord. He could see the streets rolling.
Yeah. I mean, you could actually see in the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean,
swing,
things were whipping, and the roadbed was, and I was staying with some friends at the time over on Scott Street, right across from Alamo Park, and we spent the next few nights in sleeping bags in Alamo Park because we were afraid those old Victorians might collapse right on top of
them. Mm-hmm.
So I have a very healthy respect for earthquakes and what they can do. I've seen it. God knows.
Well, one of the things you need to keep track of, and I hope I'm getting through here, is that nobody in California has died in a wood frame house in an earthquake other than being hit by the chimney falling through the roof or a bookcase falling down on them. The square wood frame house is the safest structure to be in. In Ferndale, back in 86, 89, somewhere in there, the old Victorians fell like 4 and 5 feet off their pier and post foundation structure, landed on the ground, and the people inside the houses were shook up, but nobody died.
The subsequent fires ripping through from broken gas mains were another matter.
Well, that's a real problem.
In many earthquakes where there were wooden frame structures. I was in the Northridge quake in Southern California, staying on my brother's boat.
'94.
Yeah, and I was asleep on his boat. He lived down in Irvine area, and the boat rocked in the water violently enough to throw me out of the bed, but we were fine.
Isn't you sure that wasn't just your wife throwing you out?
Isn't that a great way to wake up?
It's his way of telling you to get up. Time to go to work.
Yeah.
Well, I can't imagine the rocking in a boat would be any worse than being out in the water.
No, it was fine. But we didn't realize it was an earthquake.
I mean, a wake can do the same thing. Somebody driving through the harbor too fast.
Yep.
I haven't felt any of these fracking quakes myself yet, but I suspect it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, don't worry, Sergi, you will.
Well, yeah, you
up to this point, there haven't been any active. Up to this point, there haven't been too many active whales in this part of town, but I'm starting to see them more and more in the southeast quadrant of Fort Worth here. And there's some suspicious construction going down just at the end of the block here, the eastern end of the block here on Boy Street. There's some suspicious construction. They're digging a huge hole. And I'm afraid that it might be a fracking well. It's like, in that case, I'll be just down the street from one, literally walking distance.
It won't take long to find out if it is.
Well, the injection wells here in Florida are going nuts. They're everywhere now. I drive around, I just see them all over the place.
So is injection well just another name for fracking?
No, they're pumping wastewater down deep into the ground. Because they don't have anywhere else to put the wastewater, then they can't treat it all.
You know, in a state that's a peninsula with a thin veneer, relatively thin veneer of limestone, I can't help but think that's really going to work out well.
Well, supposedly they're drilling them so damn deep that it's going down beneath the limestone, but. Then again, there you go messing around with something, you know, too freaking deep in the earth. This is why the injection wells are the worry of causing earthquakes.
Yeah. Balrogs too.
As I see it, the earthquakes and a lot of these other things, they're all part of a pattern, and the pattern is based upon humans thinking that they can. Take the basis of life, our planet, rip the shit out of it for their comfort, and think that they can go along with their merry business with no consequences. It's a consistent pattern we've been doing for a long time, and I don't think it's going to work out for us.
Well, Bob, you said something a while ago about Florida being on a peninsula with all the water surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
We're in 2014. Have you seen any real push for desalination of water? Florida wouldn't have a water problem if they had big enough desalination plants that could handle the water problem. You got the Atlantic, the Pacific, or rather the Pacific, Atlantic, and the Gulf.
Desalination is very energy intensive, and now you're contributing to global warming again.
We really don't have a water problem anyway. There's plenty of damn water in Florida. The only thing is that the wastewater is the problem. Getting rid of it after you've used it.
Yep.
Well, yeah, but that's
there's nowhere to there's nowhere to put it, and there's nowhere to treat it.
Well, don't they
have to get to with the desalination? We're in 2014. You think if we'd have searched,
we don't even need that here.
Now they could treat
somewhere. Do you need it somewhere? Arizona, California, you know, and the nation wouldn't have a water problem.
How much coal do you want to burn to desalinate the water?
Well, that's what I'm getting to, though. In this day and age. With technology, what it is,
technology isn't going to help. Laws of thermodynamics are against you. It takes a lot of energy to desalinate water, period.
But aren't they building one or two plants in California?
For somebody, too.
California has no choice.
Yeah, there are small plants in the U.S., and there are fairly large ones in Israel.
Don't the Saudis have some huge ones?
Probably, yeah. Oh, Middle East has a lot of them, but the Saudis have lots of energy, too.
Yeah.
And they can afford to put in, you know, massive alternative energy infrastructure to support a little bit of desalination. If it's just for drinking water, desalination is not a bad trade-off. You can't irrigate single monoculture Roundup Ready crops with it, though.
Solar water desalination and distillation has been going on actually for, gosh, I believe over 40 years. And it can be done with something as simple as a large dark-colored basin and a piece of visqueen and a rock in the middle of it and a vessel in the middle. You don't get a lot of water from it, but there are a lot of villages in Africa that are doing it.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you don't get a lot of water. We as Americans use a lot of water, a real lot of water, especially for industry and agriculture.
But the principle of solar desalinization is very well proven.
Yeah, it works for small quantities, but not for a modern society.
May I ask a question,
debate that.
Please?
Go ahead, Jim.
Dubai, places like that, and other Emirates. What are they doing? Because, I mean, these people are building just stuff like crazy. I mean, they're building these palm-shaped things that they go out into the ocean, and they are just, I mean, I've never seen such a building boom in my life as what's going on in, like, an Emirate like Dubai. I mean, how do they handle this? Because
they're doing desalinization there.
But, I mean, what type of facilities do they have? They must be pretty efficient.
It's probably oil fired because they got all the damn oil in the world they want.
And probably gas fired because gas is a waste product that you get from the oil. They sell the oil. It's too valuable to burn.
Yeah, you're right, Waggy. It probably is natural. They're probably using their natural gas. You know, we burn it off of most of our oil wells, which is what a damn waste.
You know, which is also behind, and I know the bloodthirsty American right wing simply doesn't believe it, but, you know, what Waggy just said is the absolute truth. The oil is too valuable. You sell that. Which is why Iran, misguidedly, I think, is pursuing nuclear power plants. Because that way they can provide electrical generation to the country and sell the damned oil. Why is that so hard for the Bill Crystals of the world to get?
I used to get magazines.
Well, also, we've seen how dangerous it is to be sitting on massive reserves of oil and not sell it on the world market.
Iraq, maybe?
Good point.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, by the way, we were talking a few minutes ago about President Not Sure being in Belgium. While he was there, I don't know if y'all caught this or not, but he tried to explain how Russia grabbing Crimea and invading Ukrainian territory, how that was not anything at all like what we did to Iraq.
Yeah, he said what we did to Iraq was more righteous. You know what? I'm not even going to listen to this if you're going to talk about it, because it makes me sick.
That dog won't hunt. Yeah. Mike Malloy flayed Obama over this yesterday in a most delightful way. He's finished with the guy.
Well, I mean, between that and why don't you all just frack the F out of Europe? I mean, is he just not allowed to say wind and solar? I mean, I know he's been to Germany. It works.
Well, the hell with that, but to defend what we did in Iraq and in comparison to what the Soviet Union did, or I'm sorry, Russia, Jesus Christ, I'm thinking USSR again, but to compare to what Russia did with Crimea, they never even fired a shot. They gave him a vote.
That was it. Crimea belongs to Russia. That's all there is to
but,
it.
But that's worse than what we did in Iraq, according to President Not So Sure?
There you go.
The Russians are supposed to give up the biggest naval base in the Black Sea. Give me a break. Just not real thinking. When you think they're going to do that. They should, but you think they're going to?
Why should they?
We caused the death of up to a million Iraqis from what we did. And they took Crimea without a single damn shot, and they let them vote on it. And he's going to stand there and say that what they did is worse than what we did?
Well, what they're trying to do with Crimea is they're trying to say it's some type of plebiscite that happened with the Anschluss in 1938. I think that's some of the engines driving that train. And it's not the same thing. This is not 1938. 2014. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, Jim.
No, I'm just saying that the Crimea has traditionally been Russian, so has the Ukraine been Russian. And now they're going through all these things about Russian soldiers on the borders of the Ukraine. And I might have a lot of rocks thrown at me tonight, but that's okay. I've got to hide. But I just think that eventually the Ukraine will be Russian. And I think that's their sphere of influence, and we have no business in being there. I don't think we do.
The serious discussions of this that I've heard among scholars of history in that area really view Ukraine as essentially Russia, and that this should be viewed as largely an internal process. And I myself, when I lived in Germany, had a number of friends who were from Kiev. And they considered themselves Russians, the Russian culture was dear to them, and they were proud of Ukraine, but Ukraine was just a state in their mind.
It's the motherland. That's what we people don't understand.
Yeah.
They really regard this whole area of as being part of the motherland of Mother Russia.
That's right.
And they're very proud of it, too. And I think one of the worst things that ever happened, and I'm gonna put myself out on a limb here, well, not really, but I think one of the worst things that ever happened was the breakup of the Soviet Union. I really do. Because you've got all these states in there that are just power vacuums, and they've lost a lot of support and infrastructure from Moscow, as bad as it was. Now look what they have. I mean, it doesn't look too good to me. And I think Russia's going to be trying, like a mother hen, to gather her chicks under her bosom, if I may use that bizarre method of explanation.
To backtrack just a touch here, back to the subject of Obama, I have to say I still support him as our president. One thing that I know is that consistently presidents have been making themselves war criminals soon after they enter office, usually. And in Obama's case, the continuation of drone strikes and the enlargement of that combined with a failure to prosecute the previous administration's war criminals land him solidly in the camp of war criminals, war criminal himself. And it's a very sad but true fact in my eyes.
Well, I can't think of too many.
Last week he was sitting in The Hague pontificating about how bad Russia was. Anybody get a laugh out of that?
Well, no. Politicians can heave the bullshit with two pitchforks in one hand, you know? They're really good at it.
When his when his former President Bush should be in The Hague for war crimes, he's sitting in The Hague defending his ass and pontificating about how bad Russia is for what they're doing. That's just...
Who writes this
money
shit?
Talks.
Well, one of the things. Oh, by the way, before I go any further, I need to get some thanks out there. I want to thank Diane in Kansas, Stan, for jumping into the fundraising fray this evening. She's taken us down to needing to raise only another $100 to be done for the week and be to the good for the week. So that makes a big difference. Thank you very much, Diane. So 10 at 10, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, any combination of the above. And we will be on track for fundraising. But what I was going to say is that I have this nagging sense, and Jim has, you know, Jim's addressed it. Putin wants Ukraine, and he probably wants Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania, and to reabsorb Belarus, and. That just seems really, really a perilous way to move into the remainder of the 21st century, because, you know, today Ukraine, tomorrow Poland.
That brings up a question that's been on my mind, if I don't mind me interrupting here. Does the U.S. have a legitimate interest in this Russia, Ukraine, Crimean Peninsula thing or not?
I think not.
Do we have a reason to be interjecting ourselves into this? I mean, like, is there a legitimate reason for us to do it? Because if we do, what do we expect the president to do? Is he going to stand up and say, we don't want you to do this, but we lost all our credibility because the previous president invaded another country? I mean, I don't want to come across as an apologist, but I don't know what he's supposed to do in a situation like that, unless it's just generally none of our business and we should not be involved in it one way or the other.
It really depends on how you define legitimate interest of the United States, because to listen to some of these warmongers, legitimate interest of the United States extends to anything we want.
Yep.
Who's we, though? I mean,
I don't think we have a legitimate interest at all. I do not.
Well, we have treaty obligations.
I don't personally. Well, yeah. Well, that's what some of those other countries.
Maybe I'm just a ninny about all this, but, you know, it's 100 years ago this year that we sort of christened the blood-sodden ground that would become the 20th century. I mean, I think you can make the argument that the 20th century begins in August 1914. In earnest.
I say you and myself, but that's, you know.
And you know, there were, and that's the thing, there were treaty obligations involved there, too.
Yep, all over.
But I don't think, we don't have a treaty obligation with Ukraine, though.
No, but we have one with NATO.
That's
yeah,
it. There's
but
an interlocking
Ukraine is not
web
part
of
NATO.
Obligations there. There is. And it's through NATO. And that's part of why Putin is acting.
No, Ukraine is not part of NATO.
No, they aren't.
Joseph Stalin made a comment one time when NATO was first formed, and I think subsequent Russian leaders have said the same thing. If NATO is such a wonderful thing, then why have we not been asked to join it?
And Jim, you know, the truth of the matter was that Stalin was as nutty as a fruitcake. And potentially, I always tell Bob, thank God him and Hitler hated each other. What a combination that would have been.
Mm. It's just amazing how.
But that's, you know, the question that I'm asking. What happens if Mr. Putin decides that he's got a hankering for Poland?
That I don't think will happen.
Well, the Germans, the Austro-Hungarians, and the Russians had a hankering for Poland so much they split it up twice, at least.
Yeah.
Well, not counting, you know.
Well, I think maybe he's learned a lesson about that. I don't know. Maybe
I don't know. My experience of the 21st century so far has been a lot of things that I never thought would happen just keep happening over and over and over again, and nobody seems to learn any lessons from anything, not even from 20 years ago, much less 100 years ago.
That's the gift of history, is that it keeps repeating itself.
My understanding of the situation, as Putin might see it, is that the United that NATO and the Western powers have encroached heavily on its sphere of the former Soviet Union, Russia's sphere of influence, with forging all of these EU and NATO memberships steadily headed eastward. And part of the reason why the Ukraine thing is happening is because Putin sees further encroachment and an effort to bring Ukraine into possibly EU or NATO status, and so I guess he felt that he had to start drawing a line somewhere too.
And we're talking about bread here. We're talking about something to eat.
Well, I mean, how would you like it if the Iranians decided to annex Mexico? Yeah, that's about the same thing. I mean, if we tried to drag Ukraine into NATO, that's about the same damn thing.
Yeah, that's pretty.
To be honest with you.
Well, I think it's more like Mexico wanting to take over Texas.
Yeah. Well, no, not really.
Oh, Mexico actually
is part of us.
Yeah.
I'm talking about another treaty organization. Maybe Russia take over Mexico or something. What?
I'm going from the fact that it's an adjacent country. Texas could hold an election, say we want to go join Mexico because we don't want to be part of the United States anymore. So Mexican moves their army in, and the U.S. moves their army out. But the people of Texas would have voted. The people of Crimea voted. We may not like the way the election was run, but they did have a vote, and they chose to move with Russia.
Yeah, but that's not even an equal comparison, though, because Crimea doesn't have a goddamn thing to do with us.
Amen.
But Ukraine was nominated.
So why are we in the middle of it? Why do we fucking care?
Agreeing that we shouldn't care the same way that Russia shouldn't care if Mexico took over Texas, because it doesn't have anything to do with Russia. Crimea doesn't have anything to do with us. I'm just saying that the Russia-Crimea situation would be similar to Mexico, and call it New Mexico, Arizona, Texas. The state really doesn't matter, but the state.
Okay, so you're turning us into Ukraine and Russia into us, then, in that situation.
Well, I mean, vice versa, but yeah, we get a point. Go ahead, Jim.
No, I mean, does anyone remember the Zimmerman telegram?
Yep.
And of course, you know.
And Jim, was that for real or was that BS?
No, that was for real. That was for real, as far as I know. And
yeah, I'm familiar with it, but I always question things now in this generation and day and age of communication.
No,
I question a lot more than what I was taught as a kid,
No, they decoded that telegram sent by the German Foreign Office, Mr. Zimmerman, who was encouraging Mexico to make incursions into land that we had taken from them, like Arizona and places like on the Mexican border, other states as well. And we really got into a case of the fantods about that, and that was one of the reasons we got into the First World War, in addition to, I mean, they used unrestricted submarine warfare, which was, I guess part of it too. But, my situation is this. We belong in our sphere of influence, and Mr. Putin belongs in his. And there's not a whole lot we can do about it. I mean, we do not have the ability, the force structure, and the right, in my opinion, to meddle in their affairs. And as long as we do that, and as long as there's some type of mutual respect of who has what and who has whom, then I think things might be a little easier, that more easily dealt with. That's just my position.
Well, one problem we have here is that with the right wing so busy trying to put down Obama and make his foreign policy decisions look ridiculous, a decision to not meddle in this matter is going to be presented to the American people as weakness. And they're exploiting the simple fact that they can point at something and call it weakness because they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody
I want to go one step further. I wonder what they'll think then.
You know, if they'll think at all.
Why do we really even need NATO anymore?
I wonder.
That is a very good question. The Cold War has been over for, let's see, over 20 years.
It's an arm of America.
I mean, they tore down their walls, right? So why the fuck do we still need NATO?
It's an arm of multinational corporate power.
And, you know, and basically what they want to do is, the European Union, what they want to do with the Ukraine, as I said before, they want to go into these countries and do what they did with their financial dealers and transform it into another Greece.
Well, I agree with that.
Precisely.
Of natural resources. Yep.
That is accurate.
Right. I mean, like that story from a couple of days ago. Hello, Ukraine. Welcome to the West. Your natural gas bill just went up 50%.
And the Russians had offered them the deal, we will decrease your gas bill by 30%, and we can give you so much more money. And, you know, I think the Russians are being sort of cast in a very bad light as far as what they would like to have in their own world is concerned.
Well, they did, you know, they it didn't, but that didn't start with Ukraine, Jim. They put themselves in a bad light with all of their homophobia, the so-called gay propaganda law, the roving bands of right-wing thugs that beat up gay men.
Well, that's Russia. That's
We went through that shit in this country too, though, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, look at what we've done. I mean, God Almighty, in the past 30 years ago, I can remember the same types of practices being practiced here.
And we have a party that would like to actively engage in all of those things right now. They're called Republicans.
They're ruled by the Christian right is their striking force, and the guys with the money are the guys pulling the levers. It doesn't take a college education to figure out the logic and the philosophy of these folks.
I mean, I don't. I'm like Jim. I don't want to apologize for Russia, but I'm too damn. You know what? I'm not going to apologize for us anymore over the crap that we've done. It's, you know, it's stupid. This is stupid. The whole thing is stupid. We have no business.
Amen.
Being involved.
I agree with that. I mean, you know, I do.
We got enough going on here that we should be worried. I mean, the people in this country just kill me how stupid they are that they're. What I'm looking at and what Bob looks at a lot, the Great Depression. Here we go again. It wasn't much fun the last time.
Well, I mean, you know, I was on the phone.
We allowed our financial institutions to take down the entire goddamn world economy. Now, here we sit because all these other countries are suffering because of what we let our banksters do. And we're going to sit on a damn high horse and say that somebody else is doing something wrong?
Now,
give me a fucking break. Now, excuse my language, but seriously.
There is wisdom. There is wisdom.
Yeah,
and yet nothing happened to the banksters. They got away free.
Right. It's comparable to that story of the poisoned water in Italy from earlier in the program. The significant difference being, you know, there are 19 people on trial for poisoning 700,000 people's water, but here in America, you know, not even so much as a misdemeanor stream littering charge for the Freedom Industries boys because money.
Yep.
Nobody goes to jail. They just pay fines. The Bank of America just paid that big, what was it, $9 billion out to Fannie Mae?
Mm-hmm. This reminds me of something that Bob, that you were talking with Dr. Bill with a week or two ago, when you when you had joined the discussion with him for a good like an hour there or something, you came up to the point that that the modern corporations were a lot like what the Catholic Church used to be back during the colonial periods. It's like, you know, the whole, I don't know if I'm putting this clearly or not, but like the idea of like state actors, like the concept, the definition is shifting away from like nations as we have it conceived to more like, you know, private roaming, you know, corporate concerns. Yep. Like the banks have screwed us over, but the banks aren't really us. They don't belong to America. They're their own entity. You know, they have their own thing going on now.
And they respect no borders.
They don't have any. That's They've got no checks on their power.
I mean, that's what I mean.
They penetrated us.
That's what I'm trying to say. To them, they have no borders. I mean, anybody they can ensnare, they consider fair game.
And no higher authority.
And no accountability and no responsibility.
And let's remember, private corporations run our intelligence services now, too. I mean, for the most part.
Yeah, well, anybody...
Wait a damn minute. Our legislatures allowed that shit to happen.
A long time ago.
Well, no, back in the Clinton days.
How do we roll it back now?
Glass-Steagall?
The answer to...
Get it passed. I'd like to see it.
You ever tried to stuff a cat back in a bag after it got out? What happened?
Yeah, the genie's out of the bottle. Now we can put it back in. But I want to hear a good plan. How do we do it? I'm ready.
Well,
I
just want to see us freaking accept responsibility for it. Is what I want to see.
Well, I'll chime in here for a minute. Oh, by the way, and thanks. He's not in the group this evening. But thanks to Jack for helping out this evening. That means we are only $80 away now from finishing the week to the good. Thank you, Jack, very much. I know this is probably not even, it's neither helpful nor productive. It's just where my head is. And my head right now is in a place that says, you're right. The genie's out of the bottle. The cat's out of the bag. You know, the marbles have been spilled upon the floor. And for instance, you know, our buddy Jeff, who talks about wanting to create some sort of a metric of human worth or whatever, a way to fix an obviously dysfunctional, broken system. And maybe in my advancing age, I'm just turning full-on nihilist. I don't think, Horst, and I'm sorry, I wish I did, I don't think it's fixable. I think predatory capitalism has to collapse of its own weight.
Well, I think that's what we're looking at. I think we're looking at, we're standing on the brink of a collapse of an entire, all our systems.
No, well, that's what I said a few nights ago. I think we're in the collapse, Horst.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. And I think part of the reason, I don't know, again, it's really hard to guess what's going on, but I look at what Obama's doing, how he's handling a lot of these situations, and he acts... Like with regard to fracking, for instance, or with regard to like signing the TPP treaties or something like that, he seems to be acting in a way as though like the future is something that does not even exist. And sometimes I wonder myself if he's just trying to hold the whole ball of wax to keep it from falling apart completely, and just making all these temporary concessions, just, you know, just to try to keep like the center held together somehow.
Yeah, and at least as long as he's in office.
Well, yeah.
That reminds you of Louis the 15th, doesn't it?
Après moi.
Le déluge.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack points out, by the way, capital versus people. Capital can move in a second. People can't. Families, communities can't move quickly.
I think that one thing we also need to consider is that there are a lot of new elements that human ingenuity has added to the blend when it comes to a collapsing oligarchical system like what we're witnessing now, And one thing that's always worried me was the rise of surveillance technology to suppress constructive efforts towards transformation into a some kind of new society. I think what we're going to see is concentrations of power and wealth in the hands of an increasingly fearful gated community mindset, using technology to suppress revolution everywhere it happens. And that's going to be one scary fucking world.
Well, that's absolutely correct, and that's exactly what it could be used for. I mean,
yeah, and I've got a good example for that. Well, down here in Broward County, Florida, we got the, I guess it's the Army. I don't know what division or anything. They got Black Hawk helicopters and Loaches flying around training the fucking BSO. What they're training them for, I'm not sure.
But
the other night, the Broward Sheriff's Office.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was driving down 95 the other night, and a Black Hawk helicopter went by in front of me. Now, get this. He was about 100 feet off the deck and less than a mile away from Fort Lauderdale Airport, and he was flying around doing serious military maneuvers. You know, the nose of the helicopter almost pointing straight down, going across I-95 with no running lights. None whatsoever. Totally dark. And that's training operations that they're doing with our sheriff's office.
Florida Guard?
No, the sheriff's office.
Well, but I mean the military unit, is it Florida Guard?
No, I don't think so. I believe it's the actual U.S. Army.
Hey Jim, did you happen to hear the fighter jets go over the last couple of nights?
No, I didn't.
It was kind of creepy and sort of thrilling at the same time, I guess.
Well, I'm used to that. I mean, you know, Lord have mercy, how many Air Force bases have I been at, and so fighter jets and stuff like that are.
Well, around here they're rather of a novelty, but for two nights in a row at the same time each night. We've had a pair of fighter jets go over low altitude, really loud, and you know, we just happen to be in the flight pattern or something these last couple of evenings, but it makes you stop and wonder. And what I said earlier to Horst. You know, it's not that we're on the brink of the collapse. The collapse is happening around us. But the thing with collapses, they are generally not entirely cataclysmic, or it's not cataclysmic for everybody all at once. Look, a mountain in Washington was clear-cut and overlogged, and now there are probably 114 dead people. There are 100 billion gallons of toxic waste sitting behind dams made out of compressed dirt and rock in southern West Virginia and eastern Kentucky and southwest Virginia and northeast Tennessee. Well, there aren't any sludge dams in Tennessee, I don't think. But one of those things, or several of those things, are gonna fall apart. And it's gonna be horrible. It's gonna be nightmarish. It's going to be beyond the ability of anybody to conceptualize it. And just to go back for a minute to something that I was saying to Dr. John a couple of nights ago when we were talking about the difference between a culture successfully living on and in the land for, you know, tens of thousands of years, if not hundreds of thousands, the difference between that and what comes after this collapse because of the componentry of this collapse may very well make it impossible even to go back to that, you know, that basic transmitted wisdom of here's how to flake a point and don't pet the rattlesnakes, honey.
Yeah, since you bring that up, Bob, if I can interject again, since we have a couple of people in here who have pretty good familiarity with nuclear technology, this is something I've been dying to ask for months now. If there's an actual collapse, I mean, I just did a quick web search a little while ago. We got 65 producing nuclear power plants in America. That's just the continental U.S. and apparently a lot of other nuclear reactors too, I guess, for research purposes and this and that. If there's a genuine collapse, is there a human is there a future for human civilization after that? I mean, we got one power plant, Fukushima, wreaking havoc that we don't even understand yet. We know what Chernobyl has done beyond just what the official story was. Now, multiply that by how many hundreds we have going on around the planet. Is there any point in making science for future civilization when we have that much, I mean, all these Mark I plants and all this, you know, these nuclear, these spent rods and all this stuff, is there any surviving that on a species perspective?
I'll defer to the experts in a second, but, you know, there's even more to that question than what you put out there, Horst. You know, we have nuked the world. The French did it. The Russians did it. The British did it. We did it. The Chinese have done it. We have nuked
with
the
bombs, though.
Yeah, right.
With bombs, not with meltdowns. It's a different thing.
Oh, it absolutely is. Factor in one
material in nuclear reactors. Each.
Wait, please.
Bombs worth of material.
Wait, please. Wait, yeah. Just 1 second. Factor into this, and this was a study from about a year or so ago. Apparently, a lot of these radioactive reliant medical imaging diagnostic machines, the CT scanners and whatnot, are being operated at wildly different levels of calibration. So what the story said last year, or whenever it was I heard it, was that about 20 years from now, we're going to have cancer clusters that we cannot even conceive of, and it's going to nothing has to melt down, no bombs have to go off. It's going to be because these machines were used improperly.
I thought their calibration
was,
Bob, excuse me, but I thought their calibration is very strictly controlled by the NRC. I mean, you even have people who work around these machines who have to wear dosimeters, and you know, every month they have to be sent in to a central regulating agency to see who's gotten what. So it's not like, you know, it's a wildcat thing.
No, this study specifically pointed out that you can get a bigger dose from machine A than machine B, or a larger dose from machine C than machine K, depending on where you are in the country, depending on the training level. And it would be nice if they were, but this study said that that was absolutely not the case.
Which study was that, may I ask?
Like I said, I don't remember. It's, you know, here, let me see.
Okay, while you're looking, let me debunk my own conspiracy theory. Actually, the Broward County Sheriff's Office was just advising people that the U.S. Army would be training over top of Fort Lauderdale. They call it routine training, but what I saw didn't look very routine.
Well, what the Army considers routine is what they consider to be routine.
Yeah, flying really crazy maneuvers over top of a heavily populated area. Yeah, thanks. But no thanks if you ask my opinion.
Well, if history plays on, I'll have a couple of F-18s fly over straight over the top of my house in a couple of weeks.
Yep. Well, we have air shows around Cleveland where they do that crap all the time. Every year. They're going to pay to see.
And right. When I lived in North Carolina, we used to get the B-1s. They'd fly over at treetop level.
Well, they have a flyover for the rodeo here. They get a couple of F-18s come out of Fallon, Nevada, where the Top Gun school is.
Oh, they did B-1 training missions in North Carolina.
It's just over the mountain from here.
I'm not too sure what exactly the aircraft that I see flying over Fort Worth are, but I mean, they've been flying weird patterns for training over the city of Fort Worth for years.
Well, I'll tell you what, with any sporting event that I follow anymore, it seems they have to have a rollout of the armed forces to make everybody proud of what... didn't they do that in Germany a lot, Jim?
What's that, didn't Bill? I'm sorry.
Didn't they show the flag? I mean, what they're doing here... You can't turn on a sporting event without a flyover or a special military thing
and
Star-Spangled Banner, and you keep going, and it just, you know,
it's part of their recruitment stuff, Bill.
Yeah, of course, yep. The Blue Angels and stuff like that, and, you know, yep. And of course they I mean, we've been doing that for years.
Yep.
I mean,
with an element of hooray for America, nothing is wrong.
The Blue Angels just started up flying again. They were grounded because of budget cuts.
All right.
Sequester. Sequester. Yeah.
Yeah, sequester, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, we missed out on having the Thunderbirds in Fort Lauderdale because of the sequester. I actually enjoy watching that stuff.
Holy cow, it's enjoyable to watch.
I think it's awesome.
I do, too. I really do. You know, I guess I saw I'm sorry. I'll defer.
Like I say, it's recruitment. We've had air shows in Reading for years, and when the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds come in, they visit all the area high schools. They go around and sign autographs and do all that stuff. They're just on a recruitment trip.
Well, when I was under 10 years old, the air races were a thing here in Cleveland that was just serious, you know. You thought it was the World Series, you know, the air races. What the hell?
Well, you know, in an earlier
era. Yeah, they still have them in Reno every year.
Well, in an earlier era, you had a lot of people who were doing barnstormings and all this kinds of stuff when aviation was in its infancy. And,
well, when it was brand new, I can understand it. But, man, did they do a sales. And you older guys, did you ever have fun building a submarine, the USS Nautilus, models of it?
I built it.
Yep. That was,
I don't know.
I don't know. We used to have the submarines that come in the cereal box. You put bacon soda in or something.
Oh, weren't those fun?
Yeah. Well, that was a good toy to watch the thing sink, you know.
It was like you could use Alka-Seltzer's work, too.
Right. I remember those things.
And it had a little, there was a little thing that plugged into the bottom of the plastic submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it would propel it and then I guess it was, Hammacher Schlemmer back in the 80s, when I was living and working in Atlanta, they had a remote control submarine that I wanted badly.
Oh, that's
when you're a kid, man, you gotta have that stuff.
That sort of thing appeals to a young person or a young guy, and he's just fascinated by the technology and by all the other things that, make it so attractive and daring. I mean, that's just a great,
if you're recruiting engineers for various and sundry other good things, it's a good thing to have kids interested, I suppose. I mean, I used to pick up books on TV repair long before I could tell you one tube from another, you know?
When I was a kid, I was absolutely fascinated with building the models of the World War II era Navy planes, Wildcats, Hellcats, Corsairs, the SBD Dauntless, the SB-2C Helldiver, the TBF Avenger, the PBY Catalina. Oh, I loved those things.
Your minds to work together, you know. That's important. It was an important because, you know, your dad's generation and even mine. What do you mean pay some guy to work on my car? Are you kidding me? I'll figure out how to do it. And I'll screw it up as fast as the professionals will, you know?
So, But I won't lie to myself.
I'll tell you what, Bob, I love that list you just rattled off there. I fly all those planes in that game I play, which I enjoy so much.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes.
When the babies were considerably smaller, younger than they are now, had the chance, and it was before he died, to go to Naval Aviation Museum at Pensacola and to see those things. You know, huge aircraft to me, but nothing compared to the size of a modern warbird. And the first thing you saw when you walked in there, they had a scale model of the USS Essex, which was my father's ship, sitting next to a scale model of the Nimitz. And
you had to build Missouri when I was a kid. You had to build one of those too. You know, that was another thing.
But what was amazing is the comparative size because the Essex class was the biggest aircraft carrier built in the Second World War, and it looks like a dinghy sitting next to a Nimitz class nuclear carrier.
What wasn't the four-stall Essex class?
I think so. Yeah. And the intrepid
tour that thing.
The intrepid that sits in New York Harbor is Essex class, and so is the Lexington that sits in Charleston Harbor.
No, that's the forestall at Charleston.
I've been on the intrepid.
No, well, maybe they've added it, but it's the Lexington.
Well, I don't know. Well, I went to Charleston years and years and years ago, and I'm pretty sure we toured the forestall.
Poor Mr. Ford.
I may be wrong. It doesn't matter either way.
You guide him.
It's the same classic here.
Oh, wait. No, the Lexington is in Corpus Christi. Maybe it's the Yorktown that's in Charleston.
The Yorktown, you're right. It's the Yorktown. The Forestall is the one that I built as a kid.
You know, that was conditioning as well as it was good training for your eyes and hands and brain, but you know, it's always good to be able to do something, you know, but it's always, well, we built a lot of antique cars too, was another thing. I had a couple until about 10 years ago, and then they got lost in a move somewhere.
And you know,
I did all those cars, and then my mom let my nephew play with them. That was the end of those.
Oh, kiss them goodbye.
Oh, you know what? Who was it that used the term? Was it Psychoticus that used the term pariah ship when we were talking about transporting the plutonium from Japan to the United States?
Could have been. He's.
Yeah, it was him.
He's in and out.
Well, I got to thinking about it. Lo and behold, I guess the Navy has one of those now. The very aircraft carrier that got nuked in the Fukushima disaster. The USS Ronald Reagan.
And the USS Trickle Down.
There you go. Yeah.
Have any of you ever wondered about what happened to Mr. Forrestal?
Yeah, I've heard of it, and I just heard, well, the story that we've got in the history books, and you know it, Jim, that he had a nervous breakdown, as they called it in those days.
Well, preceding that, he had gone into a certain area called Area 51.
Okay, yeah, we heard of that, too, from the guy on Perron from Nevada, talked about that a lot.
And apparently he was adversely affected by what he was able to see. I mean, he was in the position to do it. I mean, he had the clearance and everything, and he had the position to do it, but then all of a sudden he got real sick, and they put him in Bethesda. And then, lo and behold, out he's plummeted from a 19-story building.
Did he have any help getting out the window?
He was probably put down because he wouldn't keep his mouth shut.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like that guy that the Mafia had that they put in this hotel somewhere in New York. All of a sudden, he took a swan dive onto a lower built roof. I mean, who knows? I'm not going to.
A lot of that happened in that organization, yeah.
But there's just a lot of strange things that happened to Mr. Forrestal, who was a very intelligent, extremely erudite man, and he saw some things that perhaps they did not want him to see, and you know, who knows? I mean, it's all speculation, but he did, you know, they said it was suicide, and here's one of our top defense secretaries going from a man who was, you know, basically inquisitive about certain things. Well, I guess that in that case, curiosity did not bring the cat back to life.
Yep. If you don't ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies.
Well, didn't Smedley Butler die under similar circumstances too? Except they never said it was suicide. It was like a vehicle accident or something.
Hey, there's a guy I'm kind of happy with, old Smedley, I'll tell you. And who went to Smedley? Wasn't it the guy who maybe was Prescott? Was it Bush? Prescott Bush?
It was the Bush family was part of that conspiracy to mount a coup against FDR.
Yeah.
And Smedley Butler was 59 at the time of his death.
Yeah.
He died in a foreign country in some type of vehicle accident, right?
I'm looking now.
Pretty sure I remember that right.
Can I tell just a real short story?
Jump right in.
Please.
My dad is 95, almost 96. He started watching Band of Brothers the other day. And he made it all the way. In 2 days, he watched the whole series. But at one end of one of the episodes, he started talking about one of his buddies that was in the motorcycle club. It was in the 101st. And he says, he got to drive Goering's staff car when they took the Eagle's Nest.
Really?
Wow.
And I thought, that's a story.
That must have been one of the Nazis didn't sabotage, because I understand they were going to, they destroyed a lot of vehicles and stuff like that.
Well, you see, you watch the series, at the end, they take, the guy that's the one officer that likes his booze.
Yeah.
The other main officer takes him over to Goering's chalet or whatever and opens up the wine cellar and says, make sure everybody gets a bottle.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, Smedley Butler died of what was apparently upper GI cancer. He died at the Naval Hospital in Philadelphia in 1940.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I got my guys mixed up then. I'll have to look that one back up, who I was thinking about.
Two-time Medal of Honor three.
Two-time Medal of Honor.
He did a lot of work in Haiti, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
In that part of the world, he was doing some things. I think he was kind of unhappy with the whole thing toward the end.
Well, that's why I wrote War is a Racket. Kevin, what were you saying?
Hold on. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
I think who you're thinking of is the general after World War II was just over, was in, I think it was Germany, and was killed by
Patton.
MacArthur. Who?
Patton.
Patton.
Not Patton.
No, we're talking about...
No, he's on the right track.
But there was another, one of the other generals that was killed was...
Who was the one that was speaking up against
Lee J. McNair.
McNair?
The one that was speaking up against those two brothers that ran. One of them was Secretary of Defense, another one was...
Oh, the Dulles brothers?
Yeah, the Dulles brothers. The one that was speaking up against them.
On the market now. Yeah, they wanted us to bomb around D and B and Foo and get into another war in 1954.
He's got the right, I think he's got the right general, but he's got to find his name. I'll have to look it up. This guy's going to take a while for me to find it, though.
Here's what Butler said. I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service, and during that period I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped make Mexico, and especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of a half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1902 to 1912. That would later, of course, become Brown Brothers Harriman, for which young Prescott Bush worked and got busted in the Trading with the Enemies Act. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for the American sugar interest in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for the American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents.
Okay, now let me add something to that. Do you think General Schwarzkopf will have a come-to-Jesus moment about what he has done all the way dating back into Vietnam?
Oh, hell no.
He's dead.
He's dead.
Schwarzkopf's already dead? I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
And you know who he's...
So he never came to Jesus about the bullshit he did?
Nope.
Prostate cancer.
Speaking of Schwarzkopf,
Schwarzkopf's dad was a highway patrolman, and he was an investigator in the Lindbergh kidnapping.
Mm-hmm. Well, he pretty much picked up where Butler left off right there.
Well, I was listening last night to Small Time Radio. It was a gangsters episode from 1938. They had narrating by proxy H. Norman Schwarzkopf. That was Schwarzkopf's father.
Right.
It was actually 1941, before the war.
His old man was involved over in Iran at some point too. If I'm not mistaken, the Schwarzkopf's dad. I know too much, but too little about all of it. There's not enough room in my brain anymore. I'm being dragged to a TV show Monday to stand around and play harmonica, and I never thought I'd reach a point with something that I loved to a point where, don't ask me to do that. I did it enough. Thank you.
I'll tell you what, Schwarzkopf did some damn dirt, and I don't have time to drag it up right now. Of course, we're about on the end of this anyway.
Yeah, we're right at it.
Maybe next time we get together, we can explore him.
Well, we are, you nailed it, Jay Cruzen. We are at the end of things, so I will bid a fond adieu to you all and wish you all a very happy weekend and the entire Horn family commune a happy weekend. Maybe spring's going to get here yet. Thanks to the phone crew. Thanks to Bill and Jim and Kevin. And thanks to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you all very, very much. Have a wonderful evening. A reminder for anybody who wants to jump in, the Horn Malloy Skype group will be going hammer and tongs about 12:05 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Right, Sparky?
Right. Or if Malloy only does 2 hours live, we start a little early sometimes.
So just jump right in if you want to. It's a rollicking good time. Thanks to everyone who makes all of this possible. Thanks this evening going out to Jack and Diane and Sal and Nelson. Thank you very much. We will close out. Jack took us down to only needing $80 to finish out the evening, and hopefully we'll take care of that over the weekend. We'll start fresh on Monday and not be in any kind of a hole. So thank you everyone who contributes to keep all of this going for these many years. Thank you to, our all-volunteer staff, including Sparky, whom you just heard, as well as Lottie and Texas Betsy, our moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you very much to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina. That's odd. Oh, apparently the music isn't working. Oh, very strange. Oh, well, but Gina, it's all for you. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Rick Smith is next. Bye now.